for cultivating progress across the South, for working to unconditionally improve the lives of all, and for the bold underwriting of every Gravy podcast. SFA thanks our visionary Louisville, Kentucky friends, Pam and Brooke Smith.
So, Sarah Camp, tell me your feelings about tableside dining prep.
Melissa, it makes me cringe.
Oh my goodness, that's the correct answer. So the last time I was offered tableside prep, it was actually by a bartender for a Manhattan. And we were like, no, just bring us the Manhattan in the pretty glass with the nice garnish.
Shake it up over there.
Exactly.
I'm okay with Caesar salad. I'm okay with guacamole. But I don't like the pressure of having to react with appropriate glee.
But I think there's one tableside prep to rule them all.
At one restaurant.
That's right. Bananas Foster at Brennan's. Even Grumpy Me likes that one a lot. The last couple of times I was at Brennan's, I actually started to think a lot about what it takes to pull off Bananas Foster for a crowd day after day, both in person power and in attitude. I mean, it could be that server's 500th Bananas Foster, but it's the diner's first one. That's a lot of pressure.
It's like Cats on Broadway.
It's exactly like Cats on Broadway. Gravy producer Eve Troh takes a closer look at the performance and the appeal of the tableside dining tradition through the lens of one iconic dish, Bananas Foster. And we start where the dessert was invented, Brennan's Restaurant in New Orleans.
You're listening to Gravy.
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 A production of the Southern Foodways Alliance, Gravy tells stories of the changing American South.
I'm Melissa Hall.
And I'm Sarah Camp Milam.
Eve Troh has today's story.
It's just before 9 a.m. on a Wednesday in New Orleans' French Quarter. Not normally a busy time in this area known for nightlife, but there's a line of people at the white double doors of a pink building on Royal Street. Customers waiting for breakfast at Brennan's.
Good morning, welcome to Brennan's.
Thank you.
Enjoy your breakfast. Too well.
The restaurant has been around more than 70 years. It's known for its Chanticleer room with hand-painted murals, for a rich breakfast menu and morning cocktails. But it might be most famous for a dessert.
Bananas Foster, created at Brennan's in 1951 at the original Brennan's location on Bourbon Street, but still our most ordered item, bar none, many times over.
That's Christian Pendleton, general manager for the past 9 years.
We serve Bananas Foster at breakfast, at dinner, at happy hour, at weddings, at corporate retreats. Everything we do, we always offer Bananas Foster.
The famous dish is not simply brought out from the kitchen. It's prepared tableside with a story to go along. And Christian showed me how.
Let me go ahead, and in the true spirit of our social media age, I'll start doing video.
He wheels a waist-high wooden cart over to the table. There's a burner installed on the top and a sauté pan. The ingredients are pre-measured and set to the side, and the show begins.
There we go.
Fantastic. Bananas Foster starts with just a dash of butter.
Cue the history lesson as the bananas cook. How Ella Brennan was put on the spot by her brother Owen to come up with a special treat to honor their friend, last name Foster.
We're going to add a sip of banana liqueur. So when Ella was creating Bananas Foster, they went with bananas because New Orleans was the largest port in the country for receiving bananas. So I was like, okay, we're gonna start with the brulee fruit. So you have the butter, the brown sugar, and the cinnamon. And it's like, well, how are we gonna make it special? How are we gonna make it memorable? That's when the flambé element comes into it. So then the question was, well, do we use banana liqueur or do we use rum? And one of my favorite quotes when Ella was telling the story is, hell, it's New Orleans, let's use both. Once everything has been well basted, we get ready for the flambé.
This is where the fire comes in. Flames rise up, impressive, maybe even slightly scary.
So you'll move the sauce around to make sure you burn all the rum off, but once there's no more flame, Bananas Foster's done.
He layers the bananas and then all that rich sauce on top of vanilla ice cream.
No microphones were burned in the making of this Bananas Foster.
Fantastic.
An elegant performance and delightful. Christian says it's a huge benefit to have a bucket list menu item like this that keeps business flowing at all times.
But it's also a massive responsibility because there's a lot of expectations that come with ordering something that was created at your restaurant. And the fact that it's done tableside adds to that expectation because the show has to be right. It's like Broadway every time.
Maybe the heat's too high and the butter burns. Or the heat's too low and the boozy sauce won't ignite. Unlike Broadway, the cast here will give a do-over, free of charge.
We start all over again. Like, we don't turn in a bad performance. We do it again from scratch and we give the show the right way every time.
This is a specific worldview on hospitality, where serving tables is a highly skilled, highly valued position. At Brennan's, staff often form long-standing ties with customers, whether they're locals or frequent visitors to New Orleans. They might manage requests from a family over years or even decades. Cooking for customers, like they do with Bananas Foster, is part of that relationship.
Anything tableside is that togetherness in that moment while we're cooking for you.
And it offers a layer of distinction. But how did this specific dish and its serving style become the cornerstone of a world-famous restaurant? It's the product of a few trends converging. Bananas Foster was born in 1951, just a few years after Brennan's opened. And at that time, fine dining in the U.S. meant continental cuisine, essentially European-style service and menus. Tableside dishes were a big thing, including things like baked Alaska, which was also finished before diners' eyes, at Antoine's, a competitor around the corner.
So it was less about the chef in 1951 and more about the server, the maitre d's, and so it was, let us work for you at your table. So you had a lot more things that you've, interestingly enough, you've seen come back into the dining scene in the last 3 to 5 years. You've seen a lot of fish deboned tableside, duck carved tableside.
Brennan still does several dishes tableside, and even adds new ones.
Not only do we do Bananas Foster, but we do Crepes Fitzgerald, we do Steak Diane, we do soft scrambled eggs with black truffles.
You might think, as I did, that tableside dining was a mid-century trend. I assumed it was all the rage when Brennan's opened in 1946, and they just stuck with it. But the tradition goes back much further. Indeed, it crossed the Atlantic.
It really started as a European innovation.
That's Maureen Costura, a professor of liberal arts and food studies at the Culinary Institute of America.
End of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century, the Victorian Edwardian period. Meat would be presented tableside before it was taken back to be carved. You would have tableside trolleys with cheeses that you would select the portions that you wanted. Tableside carts for the tossing of salads. And it really was, you know, very dramatic. Motion and movement and drama and activity in the dining rooms.
All this specificity, a proliferation of special preparations, was meant to convey status.
You've got the upper classes coming up with ways to gatekeep, to delineate what constituted the elite. So during that time, we get this massive growth of table settings and table service, all of those weird specialty utensils that nobody uses anymore, like the tomato spatula, the asparagus tongs.
So Americans who go to Europe experience tableside dining, come back to the U.S., and it takes off here. It all starts at fancy hotels, big cities like New York, Chicago, and international ports of call like San Francisco and New Orleans.
It's really an international marker of status and high style.
And having staff trained to serve this way, it has a name, a French name. When a server presents or cooks dishes from this type of portable cart or a stand, it's called, now I got a tutorial on this, so I'm going to try, it's called guéridon.
And those servers had to be highly trained in preparing those dishes, they really were taking some of the cooking out of the kitchen and doing it in front of the guests in public. You know, so you might also think of an evolution of this idea as being the open kitchen or the open chef's table concept.
And diners today, well, they capture it all on camera, of course, on their phones, and they share it publicly. And that, Maureen says, flips the dynamic.
It definitely will go on your social media, the images of it, you know, if you can catch that perfect bloom of flame. And that, in a sense, has democratized who gets to see into these spaces. And that's something that runs directly counter, I think, to what the Edwardians thought these restaurants should be. They were meant to gatekeep, and instead they're for display now.
So tableside preparations proliferated in the U.S. from, say, the very late 1800s to the 1950s. But in the 1960s and 70s, the tradition declined. There's no one reason. Fine dining became less showy. Lots of hospitality and entertainment traditions downsized in this time. Think of the big band at a supper club shrinking to a jazz trio at a bistro as trends and tastes changed. Chefs became bigger stars in their own right. And with the chef's creativity and skill holding more value, well, then a dish that could be made by a server tableside might be seen as less sophisticated. Yet tableside theatrics never disappeared entirely. You will still see plenty of special date nights or birthday dinners at places that do these dishes. It's just so celebratory. And there's been some revival. A flambé dessert or a steak tartare mixed tableside might show up at a nouveau chop house or a modern supper club. And it just makes sense that New Orleans is a place where this tradition never left, at Brennan's and other restaurants. The city is all about performance. But given that it's so rare to have servers who cook for customers, I wondered what it takes to keep up this tradition today.
That's after the break.
Gravy has some big news for Dolly Parton fans. Lodge Cast Iron has launched a new collection of Dolly Parton cast iron. Inspired by the one and only Tennessee icon, each of the four cookware pieces brings a bit of Dolly flair to your favorite Southern dishes. Just like Dolly, cast iron is made in Tennessee and loved all over the world. Made with just iron and oil, the naturally seasoned cooking surface on a Lodge pan is made to last for generations, so you'll never have to change your tune. Take home the new Lodge Cast Iron Dolly Parton collection and shop cookware born to perform at LodgeCastIron.com. For Lodge's longtime support of the Southern Foodways Alliance and this podcast, we thank them.
Cooking at tableside my first 6 months, Jesus, I just had to keep praying as I was cooking it. My name is Shalane Celestine, and I am a captain here at Brennan's.
A captain is a lead server.
You literally have to become second nature. That's one of those things you come in before work and you work on. You stay after work and you work on to make sure it's perfection, because you do not want to mess up such a legacy.
I talked to Shalane on a break from her breakfast shift.
So just even popping up the application was like intimidating a little, but they welcomed me with open arms.
Shalane is from New Orleans, but she didn't have much cooking experience before she came to work at Brennan's.
Did anyone give you a tip that really helped you?
One of the main things, do not let that fire go completely above your head. One of the main standards is your fire should go to your shoulders or lower. And do not burn your sauce. Once you burn your sauce, it's a sad day.
It takes constant stirring and careful attention to avoid burnt sauce. And not only is Shalane cooking live and telling the story of Bananas Foster while she does it, as she gets ready to light the flame, she makes sure her guests are rolling.
But I make sure cameras are going up to make the video even perfect for them.
So you're a video producer in addition to being a captain in Brennan's.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, you do get some guests in their mind, they press the button, but the button never pressed, so.
She grabs the rum bottle, lights the flame again. Shalane says she's seen babies cry over the Bananas Foster performance, and she's seen babies laugh uncontrollably too. She's cooked it for celebrities like Reggie Bush, a former player for the New Orleans Saints. And she's accidentally gone viral when she made the dish for an Instagram influencer and appeared on her feed.
Honestly, I love doing it. It literally brings out the inner kid in everybody. Once them doors open, I'm on stage. Lights, camera, action.
Christian Pendleton tells me that every server gets to choose when they're ready to cook for guests.
Realistically, it's somewhere between a 3 and 6 month training window before they would be in a position to cook for the guests. So in order to cook for a guest, you have to cook for one of the captains in the dining room, then you have to cook for one of my dining room managers, and then last but not least, you have to cook for me.
I asked how he finds people who welcome the extra level of care and challenge of working at Brennan's, including cooking tableside.
The biggest piece being the mindset. While none of this is complicated, it is more than what the average server is doing at a restaurant. And it takes them getting comfortable with the flame and teaching them how to be aware of what's around them and little kids walking up and adults walking by. And you have to pay attention to everything.
Be mindful and be present.
I always tell them, when you're having that moment, that's the only place you can be. Make sure that all your other things are done before you start to cook. So when you cook, you can share the story. You can share that moment.
But there are hidden costs to keeping up this tradition, even beyond the staff training. The wooden cart there by the table, that portable cooking and serving station, Brennan's has about 20 of them, and they constantly get banged up or scorched from the fire. Every few months, the carts get stripped down, stained, glossed, and reassembled. The propane tanks need to be filled and the burners checked. It takes specific labor and knowledge just to keep those implements in shape. Bananas Foster at Brennan's, and the show that comes with it, costs $14 a person with a minimum order of two. It's pretty accessible as a price point with everything involved. I asked Christian if he was aware of all the tableside dining specifics when he took this job.
I did not know the level of thoughtfulness that would need to go behind the tableside cooking. It's a wall of fire that goes up for a moment. You have to pay attention to include doors opening, because you open a door, it'll change the pressure in the room, and the flame, instead of going straight up, might swing to the right or swing to the left. When you cook outside in the courtyard, I've lit my jacket on fire twice doing it.
Accidents do happen. Brennan's is very aware of using flame retardant materials in the restaurant's upholstery fabrics and paints. Still, out in the courtyard, Christian shows me that nearly every giant patio umbrella gets a scorch mark.
The scorch marks. Yeah, almost all of these. So we have to replace our umbrellas a little more often than the business side of me would like to do that. I tell the staff sometime, like, do the best you can, be in the moment. And then when something happens, respond to it, learn and move on from it. We're humans taking care of humans. And so we have to give each other that grace.
In the 7 decades since servers first started lighting rum sauce aflame at Brennan's in New Orleans, who knows how many jackets, eyebrows, or curtains have been singed, sacrificed to the tableside tradition. But there's a delight and an intimacy to tableside dining that's made it endure beyond its exclusive gatekeeping origins. There's pride in the hospitality staff who make it happen. And their work feels even more appreciated, their personality and skill more celebrated, with every generation of diners who get to see it.
Eve Troe reported and produced this episode. For about a decade, Eve has run shows, edited and produced all kinds of podcasts, scripted and unscripted, Always On and Limited Series, daily news briefs, and documentaries. Her roots are in public radio. Basically, she turned chronic eavesdropping, curiosity, and a love of writing into a career and never looked back. Eve loves assembling and leading great teams. An Emmy and National Murrow Award-winning journalist, she works to uphold the highest editorial, production, and ethical standards while still having fun.
We thank Wendell Patrick for Gravy's theme music, and a huge thank you to Clay Jones at Oxford Broadcast Studios for recording and mixing Gravy.
Managing editor for Gravy and all other SFA media is my co-host, Sarah Camp Milam. Olivia Terenzio is our podcast editor. Fact-checking comes courtesy of Heather Cole. Mary Beth Lassiter is our publisher.
Want to learn more about the changing American South? Visit us at southernfoodways.org. There, you can read oral histories, watch films, or listen to this podcast. While you're there, become a member or make a donation. Your dollars fund our work and help us make more gravy.
I'm Melissa Hall.
I'm Sarah Camp Milam.
Excited to lap up another episode of Gravy? Tell a friend.
Pass the gravy boat. There's plenty to go around.